Esparza versus Holder, Lopez Esparza versus Holder. Mr. Holder?
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Yusuf Kohl. I represent the petitioner in this matter, Juan Lopez Esparza, who is a citizen and national of Mexico. Mr. Esparza is married, has three children born in the United States. Mr. Esparza entered the United States initially in May of 1999. In August of 2010, he was stopped for a routine traffic violation. That traffic violation led to him being immigration being contacted, and immigration then placed him into what's called removal proceedings. He eventually appeared in front of an immigration judge and applied for what's called cancellation of removal. Cancellation of removal, as this court is probably well aware of, is a procedure where a person's deportation proceedings, in essence, could be terminated and, in essence, be given permanent resident status based on certain factors. There's a total of four prongs that must be met. The first prong is the crucial one in this matter. The other three were not addressed by the court. The court, in essence, terminated his proceedings after finding that he did not meet the first prong of that. So that's the issue that we have to address. That first prong is the 10-year presence. You have to prove that you've been in the United States for a continuous period of 10 years. The starting point of that 10-year period is August of 2010, and you work backwards. So he had to have been here at least August of 2000. The undisputed facts, and I think counsel agrees and everyone agrees, that we have established at least the 10 years. Everyone agrees it was sometime in May of 1999 when he initially arrived in the United States. Where the issue develops is in his departures. There's a provision in the law dealing with cancellation that deals with certain absences from the United States. And that provision basically provides that if you were gone any one period of time for over 90 days, then that continuous presence is terminated. There's another provision that deals with if you're gone an aggregate of any number of departures.
What was the basis of the immigration judge's belief that, you know, it was more than 180 days that he was out of the country?
During the course of the testimony and in the evidence that was presented, the evidence presented established certain dates that he was here or not here.
Asking you what the judge, what was the basis on which the judge thought that he couldn't have any confidence that it wasn't more than 180 days?
It was based on his confusing testimony as far as the dates of when he left the United States and returned to the United States. Specifically, there was a departure that in testimony was December or November of 2001, returning in January of 2002. Based on that confusing testimony, and I would admit it was very confusing testimony.
So the judge thought he'd spent a year in Mexico rather than 3 months or whatever it was?
I don't know exactly what the judge thought, but the judge...
Well, what did he say?
Specifically, the judge said on page 14 of the record, says, this judge is unable to conclude that the respondent has been physically present under that because his absence cumulatively could be in excess of 180 days. So the theory would have to be that the judge would have thought he was gone at least a year and a half, which the evidence does not show that, or that taking all three departures, we have more than 180 days. Even if you take the outside dates of these departures from either November of 2001 to January of 2002 and the other departures, we still don't get 180 days.
Well, we don't have plenary review, though. Mm-hmm. You know, you need a legal issue to invoke our jurisdiction here.
With regard to the legal issue, we believe the court and even the Board of Immigration Appeals erred in concluding that he was gone for 180 days. The legal issue is basically on the fact that is a not a discretionary factor, but it's a hardcore fact. And our belief is, based on the federal rules of the CFR on this issue, once he establishes that he's been here for the requisite 10 years, then it's the government's burden to present some kind of evidence that he has not been here for the 10 years. There's no evidence.
Where is that burden shifting?
The burden is under the CFR, and I cite that on page, if I may refer to page 24 of my brief. It's the Code of Federal Regulations 8 CFR 1240.8 subparagraph D.
But that just puts the burden on the petitioner.
The petitioner has the burden of establishing his eligibility for the relief sought.
Right, so there's no burden-shifting formula. It's just all on you.
Well, it says mid-paragraph in there, if the evidence indicates that one or more of the grounds of the mandatory denial application release may apply, the alien shall have the burden of proving by preponderance of evidence that such ground does not apply.
Right, so you have to prove continuous physical presence, which includes the ruling out the issue of these absences, because that breaks the continuous.
It does break the presence, but there was no evidence that he was gone for a 90-day period of time at one foot juncture or even aggregate.
Right, and that's a factual issue. We really don't have jurisdiction to review that. What's your legal issue?
The legal issue is the judge placed the burden on the petitioner in this case to...
It is your burden.
The burden is...
The statute says that and the CFR says that.
The CFR says if there's evidence to indicate otherwise. There is no evidence in this case to indicate otherwise. There's not a shred of evidence that says he was gone for 90 days. There's not a shred of evidence he was gone for 180 days. The testimony on the dates may have been confusing. I admit that.
Counsel, how could you say it's not a shred when he acknowledges some absences?
He acknowledges some absences.
So that's more than a shred, right? The question is, how many days do you think the petitioner has suggested he's been away during this 10-year period?
The first absence that's of any relevance is the 2001, which actually occurs in 2000, but during the change in the calendar year, that's what confused everybody. But that's the first one. Potentially that one is two and a half months. There's no evidence that he ever at one specific period of time was out 90 days.
No. Ms. Cole, let's set aside the 90 days for a second. What's the total time that he represents that he was away from this during this period?
I think the total amount is under 120 days total aggregate.
That's his position.
Right.
With some of them being certain and some of them he doesn't recall, right?
There's one where he's in absence of 8 days. It could be potentially 7 days. Yeah. There's another one where it's a month and a half, where, as he describes it, a month, a week, and a week and a half. So the verbiage or the language that he uses is unclear, but there's nothing that, if we take the outside parameters of his dates, there's nothing that brings it to 180 in aggregate.
Now, was he gainfully employed during most of these years?
For most of these years, he was gainfully employed. However, the crucial year that's at play, I would argue, is 2000, 2001. That was the year when he was basically starting out in the United States, and since, by definition, he's an undocumented alien, he...
Well, was he self-employed when he was employed, or did he work for other people?
He worked for other people.
Were there any records, employment records, about pay stubs that would indicate tenure?
Unfortunately, there were no pay stubs from that period of time. He did present for, as far as establishing the 1999 present state, money that he transferred back through the equivalent of Western Union to Mexico, so that established that period of time. But the records, the physical paper record, the paper trail that would be ideal in this case, wasn't there, but that's expected in these type of situations. I mean, these are undocumented people at the beginning of their time. They just don't have the proper documentation to present their case. But there's nothing in this record to indicate the aggregate of 180 days or the 90 days at any particular juncture in time. So we would ask that this court grant the petition review and remand this matter to at least address that issue.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Cola. Ms. Lee?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Sana Lee, representing the Attorney General. The petitioner has a high burden to meet here. He has to show that the record compels the conclusion.
Well, I don't understand. What is the basis on which the... I can't figure out what the basis was on which the judge thought he had been absent for more than 180 days.
The immigration judge just pointed out that Mr. Lopez's testimony was really confusing and inconsistent with his...
Well, I don't know. What's the inconsistency?
Well, his dates were all over the place.
So his dates are all over the place. He doesn't remember. So what? Is there some reason to think that he was absent for more than 180 days?
Well, he couldn't establish with his testimony when exactly he was here, and also...
Well, if he doesn't have records, he just has an imperfect memory, but is there some reason to think? Is the immigration judge, is he just being penalized for not having a good memory, or did the judge think, no, this guy was... Did he really think that when he got married, he spent a year in Mexico?
It's not clear from the record, Your Honor. No. There's also a marriage certificate that he presented, and the marriage certificate says he was married in February of 2001, but he never testified about that time in Mexico. So it's very unclear whether he had a fourth trip to Mexico or whether that first trip was a lot longer than he was saying during his testimony.
Well, was he asked whether he had a fourth trip?
No, Your Honor. It was pointed out to him that there is this certificate that contradicted his testimony, and he didn't remember when he was married.
Well, how does the contradiction relate to the length of his departures?
Well, if he was married in February of 2001 and was gone for that whole time.
What do you mean, that whole time?
Well, if he was in Mexico at early 2001 and then came back in 2002...
That doesn't sound right. But what would he be doing? He's come to the United States, he's working in the United States. Why would he go back to Mexico for a year?
He said he got married there and he spent time with his relatives and in-laws.
What, a year with his relatives? What's he doing? Is he working in Mexico or what?
He didn't say, Your Honor. He said he
spent
time with
Mexico
his relatives.
He wasn't in Mexico for a year. I don't believe
it. Well, it was his burden to show that he did not have these breaks that in his...
All right, so he testifies, and he doesn't have any records to back it up, and he doesn't remember dates well. So the immigration judge could say, well, I think you're lying, and you were gone more than 180 days. I don't think he said that. I think he said, you know, without records, you can't stay.
Right.
Anybody who comes in, you know, undocumented alien, will have to keep careful records if he ever wants to remain.
Right. He didn't have the records, and just, you know, even his... What he was telling the immigration judge was not enough.
So is there some regulation which says that you will not be able to invoke the 10-year continuous residence rule unless you have authenticated records of all authenticated records of your presence in the United States, continuous presence in the United States?
No,
to keep all your receipts and everything, right, to show that you were here. Is that the requirement?
Rule that says you need authenticated records, but they...
Why don't they have that rule?
Well, the...
Because it's
the
an
burden
incompetent
is
agency or what?
I'm sorry?
Why isn't there a regulation which says that to establish continuous residence, you must have documents? They could be receipts from purchases, you know, in a drugstore or what have you. You have to be able to document this continuous presence. Wouldn't that make it much easier to adjudicate these cases?
Well, Your Honor, if an applicant doesn't have these documents, he can... possibly supplement the record.
But of course,
with
no one's
testimony.
Told him that he's supposed to have these documents.
Well, it was his burden to prove that he was eligible for relief, and that's what the statute says, and that's what 8 CFR.
How would he ever prove? How could anybody ever prove continuous presence in the United States?
I think some applicants do get.
Pardon?
Some applicants can provide records and
no, you tell
statements.
Me. How do you prove continuous presence in the United States? Over a 10-year period, need 181 days. That's, you know, average of 18 days a year. does that mean you have to have documents for every 17 days that you're in the United States? Because if you don't have two documents that are within 18 days, you could have been gone that 18 days, right?
Right. Well,
so
Your
what,
Honor,
do, what do you do? You could never win this case.
That's not what the IJ
You've made said. Some terrible mistake, your agency. You're letting all these people in, staying, 10-year people. They have no proof.
Well, the petitioner himself presented evidence that he was out of the country, for possibly longer than is allowed.
But what if he said he never left the country?
If he says he never left, then that would be a different situation and different record.
Well, what does the immigration judge do when someone says, "I never left"?
Well, it's all case by case.
Does he say prove it? You say, let's see documents to prove it, or just accept his say-so?
I think that's up to the immigration judge.
Well, what do they do, I'm asking you?
If the applicant has no documents?
Pardon?
If the applicant has no documents?
Right.
I think it may be possible to show presence, and if you say you've never left the country, but it would certainly
You have
help.
No idea how these cases are litigated, do you?
Well,
you don't know whether if a person just comes in and says continuous for 10 years, that's the end of the case and he's allowed to stay, or whether an immigration judge demands evidence of some sort.
Normally an immigration judge requires evidence.
Well, how could you prove continuous residence? You'd need some tremendous stack of documents, wouldn't you?
Well, yes, Your Honor, you do need documents, but in this case, the petitioner himself testified that he was out of the country at various points. And so
that was a big mistake by him, wasn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. He wasn't sure when he was gone, and the evidence that he did provide contradicted
his testimony. So the lesson for these people is, in the future, always say you never left the United States.
Well, I wouldn't recommend that they lie on the stand, Your Honor. But you know, Mr. Lopez admitted that he was gone, and he didn't account for that marriage in Mexico, and that was a key problem in his case, where his testimony contradicted that.
Well, isn't that just a month or two difference, Ms. Lee, on that marriage situation?
No, Your Honor. He said he left. Well, he changed his testimony a lot, but he ended up saying that he left in late 2001, and returned in January 2002.
Right.
So
it's just a matter of whether it was November or December, right? But
from February 2001 to December 2001 is, you know, not 10 months or 11 months.
The marriage certificate is dated February
2001. Right. So if he left...
So it could have been as much as 3 months.
You mean if he got the year wrong?
Did you travel outside the United States in 2001?
Yes.
Pardon?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what dates were those?
I don't recall, but,
Well, sound very much like this guy.
Well, Your Honor, he had time to prepare his application and prepare for his...
All right, if you were prepared, could you go and find documents from 2001 which would show exactly when you left the country and came back?
Probably, Your Honor.
Ms. Lee, do these cases start with a presumption that you're here for 10 years and then... How are this particular case selected? Because he received a citation for driving without a license? I mean, do we know how he came under the purview of the system, so to speak?
Right. He had a traffic violation, I think.
Right.
He was driving without a license. But no, there's no presumption that he has been here for 10 years. He has to establish that. And that was his burden under the Immigration and Nationality Act.
Do we have any idea how the discretion is exercised for those undocumented people who are here and eligible for this relief if they're here? How we select those people for examination on whether indeed they're eligible? Is it triggered by a traffic stop? I'm just trying to get a sense of what initiates the process.
Well, that's what happened in this case, Your Honor. He was stopped and brought to the attention of.
So it's really accidental? Is that it just the decision of when to initiate an examination of continuous presence? Is that the department's position?
That it's accidental?
I'm sorry?
That it was accidental that he was brought
to
the
attention? If we've got anywhere near the number of undocumented people who are, it is suggested, popular press, wherever.
11 million.
Whatever. I suspect a fair number are here in excess of 10 years. I just wonder how they are selected for examination. I mean, what causes, in this case, Mr. Esperanza to... Lopez Esperanza to be selected. That's all. If you don't know what that policy is, it seems kind of random, doesn't it, to you?
Well, you know, the Department of Homeland Security has limited resources, so
well aware
they can't go out and investigate everyone. But I think they do actively pursue people who are criminals. But in other cases. They're brought to the attention by local police.
And this guy's brought to our attention because he was driving without a license, as opposed to.
Right, Your Honor, and he
serious felony.
He admitted that he entered the country without authorization.
I recognize that. That's why I referenced the many millions of undocumented workers. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Lee. Now, Mr. Cole, how much time does he have?
Judge, with regard to your question, how did this case come about and so forth, I'll tell you how it comes about. If you get pulled over in any county but Cook County, they'll contact immigration. So if you're literally driving down Harlem Avenue on the left side as opposed to the right side, that's where or wherever the border is nowadays.
So we have a county-by-county amnesty program in this country?
I don't want to say it's an amnesty program, but basically if you get pulled over in Cook County, they won't contact immigration and so forth. If you get unlucky in Lake, Will, Kane, or DuPage County, then you'll go through this whole process. What triggers this is if you get placed into removal proceedings. You can't actively apply for what's called cancellation. You have to be in the deportation process.
It's a defense to removal. Hmm.
It's a defense to removal, correct. That's what it's, in essence, they call it a relief removal. In this particular case, the judge did find him, Mr. Lopez, as far as a credible. He believed him as far as, and he said that this court does not believe that the respondent may...
credible, but inaccurate. He couldn't correct. Offer testimony or documentary proof of continuous presence. That's what the issue is here. The marriage certificate is February of 2001.
Correct.
And he testified that he came in late November or sometime in December, stayed through Christmas, stayed through New Year's, got married, and then came back. And he may have misremembered the year.
The year.
Say it was 2001. Maybe it was 2000.
But the year was what's confusing, the change in the year. He left in 2000. He testified to 2001 just because he was confused as far as to that occurring. The fact that it's listed in his application that he got married in 2001, the fact that he provided a marriage certificate in 2001, all lends credence to what he was testifying to. He just mixed up the years. And, you know, and that is explained by him in a closing comment he makes where my client says, you have the proofs of all the comments.
But even assuming he mixed up the years, if you accept that he mixed up the years and meant 2000 instead of 2001, right. He's here, you know, for as long as, or he's back in Mexico for as long as 3 months during this wedding visit.
It's not 3 months. He says, briefly he says November of 2001, which is November 2000, but then he corrects it to December of 2000. So we have December and January, possibly as late as February 1st.
Well, we know because the certificate says February, what, February what?
It's February 1st, correct. Okay.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't push him over the 180 days.
It does not push him over the 90-day or over the 180 days. I believe, you know, he provided his case.
It's only if it's like a year that he was.
So your position is, Cole, at the most it's 120 days. I mean, put aside the 90
correct.
Issue. 120, right?
Roughly 120.
And a judge, because you say he was found credible, the judge can't expand it by another 50% of the 120. Is that your point?
Absolutely. That's my position. You just can't. You have to have something to say you were not here for that days, and there's nothing in this record to indicate that he's got the 90-day or the 180 days, however you want to term it. There's nothing in this record to say that was triggered, and we believe we met our burden.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Cole, we thank Ms. Lee.